want to welcome everyone here this morning to the Second Court of Appeals. We have several cases on the docket today. The first one will be argued at 9:30. Before we begin, I want to introduce the panel to you. To my right is Justice Bill Meyer, and to my left is Justice Wade Birdwell, and I'm Chief Justice Bonnie Sutterth. I understand all the attorneys have checked in. Would the clerk please call the case?
The court will now call in Ray, the convener of the court. May it please the court, Ms. Lisa Mullins to argue for the appellate, Ms. Belinda Cook to argue for the appellate.
May it
please
the court? Mm-hmm. Good morning, Your Honors. Lisa Mullen, representing Mr. Blewett. I want to first thank the court again for the opportunity to have oral argument this morning. I know all of our calendars at this time of year has gotten very harried on appellate procedure, so I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this case of first impression, which is kind of fun as well. Obviously, this
is fun for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, it's very, at least it's interesting. It's something new for all of us.
That's true. I'm not picking at you.
I know.
In many cases of first impression, and it is a challenge.
A challenge, and particularly this particular statute, the sexually violent predator, I'll refer to as SVP statute, that's in the Health and Safety Code, sort of where the civil and the criminal worlds collide statutorily, which can make it very, very challenging. Obviously, as the court probably knows, I'm a criminal attorney, and so that's how I look at this statute. Although it's civil, the legislature, I think, made every effort because of the serious and intense liberty limitations that even this civil statute, if one's found civilly committed under, because there's so many liberty interests at risk, they built in the statute constitutional protections that would be analogous to criminal cases because of that liberty interest. Specifically, under 841.061, the statute itself states that you have all of these constitutional rights that we have in a criminal case.
Before you get into your argument, and of course I've read your brief, if we agreed with your conclusion, would this be a reverse and remand or reverse and render?
I think it'd be a reverse and render.
And why do you think that?
Because the time frame's run.
Because you just simply can't redo it.
Correct.
Under any circumstance. If it's done wrong, it's always going to be a reverse and render in this circumstance.
In this circumstance, because of the strict time limits, I believe so, Your Honor.
Is that even true, though your client waived the 270?
I think he waived it for the purposes of that first continuance, but I don't think he waived it for all purposes.
Is there anything in the statute that guides us with regard to once a waiver occurs as to the 270, how we restart the clock with a new deadline?
Not to my knowledge.
Wouldn't that be a fact issue for the trial court to maybe determine what the extent of the waiver? Or do you think it's a matter of law?
As far as the waiver issue goes, I think it's a matter of law, obviously, to argue my side, because I think the mandatory guidelines are mandatory and they're strict.
No, but I mean, if your client did waive that time period, the question is to what extent? Did he waive it for all future or just in that one instance? And isn't that a fact question for the judge to decide, or do you think it's a legal issue for us to decide?
I think there would be a factual basis for that to be decided lower, except for in this particular case, I don't think that issue factually arises because it's very clear from this record that he only waived it for that one time period. And the record reflects that, and that's why they went forward without his presence.
Okay. But that's why there's no type of statute of repose or anything like this is the absolute, appeals have to be finished, everything type of deadline, right?
That's correct, to my knowledge, yes.
So the 270 is that you have to have a verdict. You have to have a judgment with regard to his status.
It has to be completed. Now, I'm sure Mrs. Fletcher, who does this all the time, may correct me if I'm wrong. That's her bailiwick of expertise. But to my knowledge, I believe that 270 is hard, fast, and solid.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. The constitutional protections that are in the statute itself, the right to a jury trial, all criminal type of things, due process rights, the right to cross-examine witnesses, the right to notice that we've got, and obviously in this case what's most important is the right to appear in trial. From a criminal perspective, that means personal appearance. I understand this is a civil statute, but I think the statute itself built in the fact that because it's quasi-criminal, what we're going to do is make sure this statute is going to take precedence over the civil rules, and the statute itself says that. Civil rules apply except for under 841-146, except for this statute's going to be ruling on these type of civil commitment proceedings. So does a defendant have a right to personally appear? What does right to appear mean? What does right to be present mean, which is a different language they use in the statute, which confuses, I think, the issues to some degree. But I think the statute itself, which has precedence over the criminal law or civil law that allows the person not to be personally there, is clear on the face of the statute for three reasons. The first one, when you look at the actual due process protections that are built in under 061, the face of the statute says he has an absolute right to appear. There's no exception to that. It does not use the word personally, but I think that can be assumed because there's zero exceptions to that. He has a right to demand a jury trial. He has a right to cross-examine witnesses, just like any other criminal case.
It doesn't actually say absolute right, does it?
There's no exception. It does not say. That's correct,
well,
Your
make
Honor.
Sure.
That's my little addition. And I subsume that, or I assume that, because there's absolutely no exception stated in that where they say that. They say he has a right to appear. No exception given for that. So that's the first argument I would make, that he had an absolute right to appear. My second argument under the statute is that it says the jury selection process will take place in accordance with Chapter 33 of the Code of Criminal Procedure. Chapter 33 of the Code of Criminal Procedure requires the defendant's presence, personal presence before voir dire can begin in any case. I think that's pretty straightforward and pretty clear. They didn't make an exception saying except this. They said the selection of the jury shall occur in accordance with that chapter, which absolutely requires the personal appearance. That's the only place we hear personally appear in the statute, but it's incorporated specifically in this statute for that purpose. The third reason is that that I say absolutely requires personal appearance is because there's other places within this same statute where the legislature gave an exception to that. And that's where you have the biannual reviews, specifically modifications or biannual reviews. And the legislature said, okay, under those circumstances, we will allow video conferencing. We will allow that to occur, and these are the exceptions. So they knew that exception occurred. And I think if they intended that for the original jury trial, they would have said that. To me, it's a very clear issue. I hope it is for the court, too. But to me, looking and reading the statute, it's very clear. When they chose to allow non-personal appearance, they provided for that in the statute. And even in that section, it's a...
That section presumes that they have been found to be an SVP.
Correct.
And that they have been committed, and therefore they are no longer at liberty. And therefore, it appears to be trying to accommodate their lack of liberty once they've been committed, whereas that assumption doesn't necessarily exist with regard to the initial trial.
And that's true, Your Honor. However,
But for this to even come into play, they're already in custody, right? Because this occurs just before they're eligible to go out onto the street.
For parole, correct.
Right. So their liberty has already been taken at the time this. They have to be bench warranted in or brought in some manner.
Typically, yes, but I think you're speaking of the liberty that's been removed by virtue of the statute or some previous.
The biennial review obviously is a review of commitment.
Correct.
Okay. So the question is to go to the chief's scenario, is there any circumstances where the person who's being sought to be committed civilly would be at liberty? Would they have already either been paroled or anything of that nature, or does this statute operate under the assumption that they are at their initial trial, that they're in custody, but they're in criminal custody as opposed to civil custody?
I can't think of all the many scenarios that would come up. I don't think we would have anticipated this scenario in particular, but I would think the assumption is that they're in custody of some sort.
Okay.
If that answers your question. My point, though.
No, I know they have to, the notices, et cetera, and the filings have to occur a certain period of time before release.
Correct.
What's the interaction of the 270-day deadline with regard to those deadlines? Is it possible for the filing to be made immediately before parole?
Yes.
And not run afoul of the statute, and therefore the parole could actually occur and the person be out on parole before the trial of their commitment actually occurs? That's my question.
Right.
I don't know the answer to that.
I think the assumption is that's not going to happen. I think that's the purpose of it, is that's not going to happen.
One would think that the state concerned about this individual would make sure that they remain in custody before the civil commitment trial, but you would also
think that
assume they would not be sending him to Colorado either.
Exactly.
Before they get this done.
Exactly. I mean, I guess the scenario would have been he would have been out, but then he got sent to Colorado in this particular scenario. But I think the statute assumes custody of some sort at the time of the jury trial on the initial proceeding.
Okay.
And to me, when the statute itself provides for an exception for the videotape reviews under the modification and the biannual review, but yet they once again, in that same same provision, require, though, that not be applicable when there has been a probable cause finding of not SVP. I made that as clear as mud, so let me restate that. The legislature has said, okay, there is certain circumstances where being present is okay through video conferencing. Not at the original jury trial, they didn't make that exception in this case. They made that exception for modifications and for biannual reviews, because there's always already been a SVP finding. And so they're saying, okay, video conference is okay under those circumstances. However, they even in that particular section said, however, if there has been a finding of probable cause since the original finding of SVP, that he is no longer an SVP person, for lack of a better term, then the video conferencing is not allowed and he is required to be present. So to me, that specifically states the legislature's direct intent that under certain circumstances, particularly the original finding and when there's a probable cause against that finding later, that defendant is entitled to be present at his jury trial. And I think it's very clear from the statute. Does that answer that question at all?
I think so.
If you look at some of the things I cited in my brief, the Law Review article is very interesting because it goes through a direct history of everything with this statute, and it talks about how these things are built in, the right to be present, all the due process protections were built in and they were contemplated by the legislature at the time because they know that because of the liberty violations of this statute, they were going to be having constitutional attacks. I would have expected more, but they will be coming, I'm sure, at some point. But what's interesting is these very rights, the right to be present at trial specifically, as well as cross-examination and everything else that goes with that right, those due process rights, were built into this statute to make it constitutional so that it would pass constitutional muster. And it's my position that to read the statute any other way and not require the personal presence of the defendant at his jury trial would be to read it in such a way that the statute would be unconstitutional. If you have any more questions at this time, I'll give you a few minutes back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. In order for appellant to prevail in this case, I think that this court would have to do two things. You would have to decide that appear means something different in this statute than it does anywhere else in our law, criminal or civil. And I think that you would have to reverse your own line of cases directing the trial courts to make video conferencing available for parties in civil suits who cannot personally come to court because they are incarcerated. And I believe that this court should not do either one of those two
things. But isn't this different from the average civil suit that involves someone who's an inmate in the sense that that inmate's liberty is at stake in this suit? In other civil actions, it's a suit for damages, or it's a suit for they're a witness, or they're it's not an issue of their liberty. That's taken care of in the criminal case. But in this civil context, their liberty issues are at stake. Because they're going to be, if it's found that they're a sexually violent predator, they're going to have to stay civilly committed.
That's correct.
So don't you see a difference there?
I see a difference as far as you're talking about their liberties. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about the language in the statute, no. The right to appear is a legal word of art, and you can appear through your attorney.
So how do you argue against, how do you reconcile the fact that exceptions are made under two limited circumstances? The biennial review and modification, it says in those cases you can appear by video, but it doesn't speak to any other case. I mean, why would there be exceptions if you could do it in the initial? Why would they carve out an exception?
That exception was not there until recently, until a few years ago. It was put there after the Littlefield facility opened out in West Texas, and now all of the people who are in inpatient treatment are at the same place, the other end of the state, and this way they weren't having to transport people back and forth for trial. Whereas if people are still in TDC at the time of trial, then we can move them to a close facility and TDC transports them back and forth for trial.
How do they effectively have the right to counsel if they're on this TV system and they can't have confidential communications with their attorney in real time during trial and assist in their own defense? How are they entitled to the right to be represented by counsel under those circumstances?
The judge in this case made it very clear that he would give attorney and Mr. Blewett the right to talk to each other privately anytime they wanted for as long as they wanted. He repeated that over and over.
In the middle of trial?
Yes,
ma'am. As witnesses are being questioned, as
That's
questions are being
said.
Formulated.
That's what the judge said.
And how did he have jurisdiction to do that with regard to the Colorado authorities?
Colorado authorities cooperated to that extent. They gave us the video conferencing, allowed us to use their video conferencing equipment, and gave us that time.
There's something in the record, I don't recall where, but that someone was in the room while he's talking with his attorney in Colorado. So how is that? Apparently, Colorado's not honoring that aspect of what the court was.
I think if you'll read the record, that is in there at one place, but in another place it says they were given confidential. The problem at first is when Mr. Blewett went there is he didn't put his attorneys, list them down with the prison officials.
Visitors.
So when this person called, the prison didn't know who it was.
One of the questions I've got is if we interpret the term appear in the manner that you are arguing, okay, which means he does not have to be physically present. He can simply be there through counsel, okay? Doesn't that effectively deprive him of constitutional protections that were intended by the legislature, which the legislature understood would be necessary to avoid the double jeopardy issues that these civil commitment statutes have? Because effectively, if he is not entitled to confront, if he's not entitled to cross, if he's not entitled to assist while physically present, it's much easier to argue this is an extension of his original punishment through a civil commitment process and therefore constitutes double jeopardy.
I believe he was entitled to do those things, and I believe he could have done that through the video. Because in this case, you know, if this had been a criminal case, we could have gone through interstate compact and got him here.
Do you have any authority, demonstrating the efficacy of video conferencing during jury selection?
I do not.
Okay.
I know that this court and others have directed trial courts.
It's one thing for the trial court to say that you can do this. It still has to be effectively done, and I'm not aware of any authority, and you apparently are not either, where a court has said, oh, yes, this was perfectly fine to allow video conferencing during jury selection, and it appears that the defendant was perfectly capable of assisting counsel in jury selection through video conferencing.
I'm not aware of any authority.
Which is why, of course, the legislature said Chapter 33 applies with regard to jury selection.
But where they said Chapter 33 applies, they said regarding the number and manner of selecting jurors. They didn't give the full Chapter 33.
I understand, but that still is voir dire.
That still is voir dire. But under 33, if prison or jail is not a possible consequence, you can still appear through counsel.
Okay, so just demonstrate and argue for me. Give me a hypothetical where the defendant is not going to be present for pretrial matters. They will ship him in for jury selection under Chapter 33, and then they will ship him back out to wherever he's incarcerated for the remainder of trial.
In practice, the people on trial for civil commitment are always in the courtroom. Now, there have been exceptions. Obviously, Mr. Blewett is the most blaring one. However, the statute allows us to commit people who are incompetent to stand trial. So those people certainly are not assisting their attorneys in jury selection or cross-examination or any of those things. The U.S. Supreme Court has approved of the Kansas statute. Kansas can commit people who are incompetent or who are insane. Those people, having a body there
but
doesn't help if their mind's not
there. But
there's
plenty of case
law
with regard to those matters that addresses the issue of physical presence, just as there's plenty of case law with regard to disruptive defendants or disruptive
Correct.
Defendants.
Okay,
Correct. Those are those. But we have a competent individual that the statute says is entitled to be physically present during voir dire, and you want us to find that appearance means that what that says in the statute doesn't mean what it says, but appearance means that basically he doesn't get to physically appear at all, or somehow he only gets to physically appear for voir dire and then gets shipped back off.
I want you to read the statute to say he has the right to appear as we normally apply that in civil context. And I want you to read the statute that says the portions of Chapter 33 that apply are the portions that they specified, the number and method of selecting jurors. Because that's what they said. If they wanted the defendant to be physically present, they would have said that, just like they did other places in the statute.
I understand that, counsel. My point is that the whole point of jury selection is to get to a trial immediately after jury selection.
Correct.
Okay. That's an essential part of the trial. They've said he has to be physically present for that essential part, and it makes absolutely no sense to make the argument that you're making, which is after he's been physically present for voir dire, he doesn't get to participate in the rest of trial. That is not guaranteed, that then he has to proceed with solely his counsel.
No. He doesn't have – appearance does not have to be through counsel only. It can be, but it does not have to be. And in most of these cases, the person is present for the entire trial. We have had cases where the person refuses to come to court, and that was not Mr. Blewett's case. He made it very clear he wanted to be there. But Mr. Blute did everything he could to obstruct being there.
Okay. Assuming your interpretation is correct, then under what authority did the judge in this case exclude him from being physically present for voir dire for this trial?
Because 3304 of the Code of Criminal Procedure says if imprisonment or jail is not a consequence, the appearance can be made through attorney. I believe that's the difference there. This is not a quasi-criminal case, as Ms. McMinn said. These are civil. That's what our Texas Supreme Court has said. That's what our U.S. Supreme Court has said. We follow the civil rules, and this is one of those cases. In this case, also, if you'll look at the history, I talked about Mr. Blewett obstructing. He refused to cooperate with deposition. He refused to cooperate with his attorneys. He refused to appear on video. The only time he appeared on video is to talk to the judge about getting a new lawyer, because that was what he wanted. One of the first things the state did was file a motion to abate this case so that we could wait until Mr. Blewett could get back here to try it. And they contested that.
But they contested it on the grounds that it had to be done within 270 days. And his position is that he had to be present to do it. And since he wasn't going to be present, he didn't cooperate.
But in that same hearing, he waived his 270 days.
Okay, but he didn't waive. He always maintained his right to be physically present with regard to each and every one of those discussions.
Correct, yes.
Are you saying that by opposing the abatement, they somehow waived the right to be present?
I think that was not an expressed waiver of that right. But I think you kind of get into one of those you can't create your own error and then benefit from it arguments, because we tried to accommodate this very rare situation.
And so you think that was of his own creation, that he went off to Colorado?
Yes. I mean, I don't think that he planned to hurry up and go there before trial, but certainly it was because of his acts that he was there.
So he caused the problem by getting removed to the Colorado penal system.
He caused the problem by having a detainer on him from Colorado, so that once he was paroled here, Texas had no choice but to send him to Colorado. The 270 days, I know y'all were asking questions about that earlier. If you go back and look at the entire statute from the time the first referral is made, and you add up all those time limits everybody has, the 270 days is aimed at us getting to trial before they get out. That is most often what happens. It is not always what happens. We have tried some people who were out on parole shortly before trial. We have had to retry some people because on appeal we lost, and the cases were remanded for retrial. Supreme Court has sent cases back for retrial years after the original trial. So I do not believe that 270-day deadline kills the case if the case is overturned.
Have you cited those cases where remand is the remedy in your brief?
I have cited cases where the United States did remand. I did not make that particular argument. I see that my time is up. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Just real briefly, she makes the argument that she's asking you to read this in accordance with the civil rules of how we interpret presence, and the statute itself says that's not how we're going to read it. If there's a conflict, we're going to read it, and they built it into the statute, once again, for the same reasons we've been discussing. That the statute is what applies on how we read it, not the civil rules on what being present is, which allows a trial without the person actually being physically present.
Could you address what she said about section 33.004 and how chapter 33, that part of chapter 33, does not require physical presence during jury selection?
I didn't get the first part of your question. Do I agree with that?
No. Okay. Well, I'd address what she said, which was essentially that if they're incarcerated, then they don't have to appear physically. They can appear through counsel.
I don't believe that's true at all. I don't think that would ever happen under any circumstances. And I looked at the statute, make sure I haven't missed something in 30 years of practicing. And no, you can't proceed to trial without the defendant's present. I guess the argument is that this isn't an incarceration criminal proceeding, but that's where we go back to the statute that builds that criminal complexion to this jury trial pursuant to this particular statute that does require personal presence before you pick a jury and during the process of picking a jury. So I think to rely on the language on the way we pick a, the way you pick a jury is by Chapter 33. That's part of Chapter 33 is defendant's presence in aiding and selecting of a jury.
But she says that the statute actually says that the it's the number and method of selecting the jurors that we follow Chapter 33 in.
Right, and that's my argument. I think the methodology is, that's part of 33.
Okay, so you're saying physical presence is part of the methodology.
Correct, the method of selection of the jury.
Okay.
Because there's a bunch of different little provisions in Chapter 33, and I think if they wanted to exclude that, they would have in the statute. Does that address the question?
Uh-huh, yeah. It does.
Thank you. One other issue I want to talk about, because I just left an appellate seminar in Austin, and they said we always talk about harm. I don't know that we need to necessarily go there, but and it's not my favorite thing to argue. But in this particular case, the harm is very interesting in that, obviously, I think y'all are very aware of the due process harm, not being there, not seeing the witnesses. But in this particular case, there was even more harm because there was an instruction. The jury was told that he had refused to appear. There was an impression left with the jury that he refused to appear. On voir dire, you can see the harm developing because the jurors made mention of the fact that they were biased about that. The defense was not allowed to strike or challenge them for cause if they would have been prejudiced about that, and all that's in the record. And then the state argued in the end that he didn't even want to be here for this hearing. All of which is harmful, even more so in this particular case, despite all of the major constitutional violations that occur when he's not entitled to be present.
Was the jury ever told that he was in Colorado in prison?
I believe they were told he was there in prison and refused to appear through video conferencing. And the state argued that he refused to appear. The defense wanted to argue he wanted to appear in person, and the judge specifically would not allow them to make that argument. Thank you very much. If you don't have any other questions, thank you.
I want to thank you for your argument this morning. It was very helpful. We appreciate it. We have two other cases that are going to be argued, but they don't start until 10:30, so we're going to take a brief recess. But your case has been submitted. Thank you very much.
It's okay if I just leave these things.